I'm very happy to be here, and I want to first acknowledge my co-authors, Patricia McDaniel and Libby Smith. And this is broadly based on some work that we've been doing funded by Cancer Research UK. We don't have commercial interest to disclose. I did want to acknowledge the funders of our research for the last 15 years or so, and also Ken Warner, who contributed a couple of slides that I'm using in this talk. Also, the research colleagues with whom we've worked, because our conversations have really furthered our thinking in this area. So I'm going to be talking about the idea of an endgame, and I think probably some of you have heard about this at other conferences, but saying a little bit more about what we think it is. Then I'm going to do a very quick and dirty sort of synopsis of the literature that's out there on endgame ideas, talk about some strategic considerations, and to offer my view on some things that we could do to start the endgame conversation in the U.S. and what that might look like. Now, for many years, as we know, we've sort of said it was as though cigarettes just fell from the sky, and our job in public health was to keep kids from picking them up off the ground and smoking them. Now, we've gotten to a point where we realize, well, it's not quite that simple. In the last two decades, we've come to realize that there's an industry up there pouring these cigarettes down from the sky, and that, in fact, that's part of what public health has to deal with. And this is really best exemplified in this first principle from the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control Implementation Guidelines for Article 5.3, which say there is a fundamental and irreconcilable conflict between the tobacco industry's interests and public health policy interests. And this is an important principle that I think we need to keep in mind as we approach thinking about how we would end this epidemic. Now, as we know, smoking prevalence in the United States has dropped since the highs in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, when almost all men smoked and many women as well. But the fact is that it's leveled off. Over the last decade, we aren't really making too much progress, despite continuing to fight the tobacco control fight. And as this slide from Ken Warner shows, he did some modeling, the top line is the status quo. If we keep doing what we're doing and doing it as well as we're doing it, by 2050, we'll still have above 15% prevalence rates. We won't get to 5%, even if we accelerate progress by 50% improvement in initiation and cessation. So we aren't getting there, and we're not getting there fast enough. And the predictions are that if present trends continue, we will have a billion deaths in this century. Now, that is just really unacceptable, and I think we can do something about this. So our definition of an endgame is initiatives designed to change or eliminate permanently the structural, political, and social dynamics that sustain the tobacco epidemic in order to achieve, within a specific time period, an endpoint for that epidemic. There are a lot of different definitions, and we aren't going to have a single endgame plan for the whole world. Different jurisdictions are probably going to try some different things, and I think that's actually a very good thing. Now, even the idea of talking about an endgame seems heretical to many people still, even within public health. We should be about reducing death and disease, not ending anything. But I think it's time to have the conversation about how we end the epidemic. And any plan, any idea of doing this is going to face numerous obstacles, but they're basically the same obstacles we already face. Black markets, if you raise taxes, industry legal challenges for every single thing you try to do that is new and possibly effective, industry front groups, fake science, political influence, all those things that we now know we face as part of public health, we will face with any endgame plan. So let's just put those aside. We are already fighting those fights, and we're going to have to continue to fight those fights. There are four current approaches to endgame that I'm going to very briefly discuss: regulating product, regulating users, regulating the market system, and looking at retail. And of course, you could say that retail is part of the market system, and in many ways it is, but I think there are some slightly nuanced approaches there. Regulating product is where we would see things like ratcheting down nicotine in cigarettes to make them less addictive. Eliminating other kinds of product constituents, eliminating menthol. And obviously, there's a great deal of interest in these things. Now, there are obstacles, however. Obviously, if you ratchet down the nicotine, you worry about compensation. Neil Benowitz has done some work suggesting that this may not be as much of an issue as you might think. But we have to worry that smokers may smoke more or smoke more deeply if you lower the nicotine in order to try to get their dose. The industry could adjust other kinds of ingredients in order to enhance the addictive effects. Addiction is not merely physiological. It's also psychological and physical and social. And so there are these other aspects. We may not just take addiction away because we lower the nicotine. And there's a need for expensive ongoing research and regulatory oversight. But this plan does have some real advantages. FDA can do it. It's allowed to do it under existing law. There is also the potential that we will learn a lot more about these products through the scientific research that will be part of that process. So there are some pluses. But the industry pretty much stays intact under this kind of a model. Another approach is to regulate users. Simon Chapman has proposed a smoker's license in which a smoker would pay to be licensed to purchase a set number of cigarettes during a set time period and could, if they gave up their license, be refunded all the money they had paid, so as an incentive to quit. Others have suggested a prescription to purchase because these are deadly and harmful. They should not just be widely available. The advantages here are that clearly it sends a message that these are very dangerous products that need stronger regulatory control. Under the Simon Chapman idea, smokers could actually set reductions in their amount they're permitted to purchase to help themselves ratchet down and try to quit. You could also combine this with graduated increases in age to purchase. So there are some possible advantages, but I think some big disadvantages in that it allows the industry to continue the idea that this is just individuals making choices and they are responsible for their own choices, and it really takes the heat off the industry's marketing of defective products. Clinicians obviously would probably be reluctant to prescribe killer products, so it makes it a bit challenging to think about that. A number of proposals have been suggested for regulating markets, beginning with Ron Borland, a proposal from about maybe 15 or 20 years ago now to determine a regulated market model. I don't really have time to go into these, and there are some variations in these approaches, but the regulated market model, in the regulated market model, in the center there is a government tobacco products agency. This agency would be charged with buying the cigarettes from the manufacturers and with controlling the distribution to retailers. So the government could say, well, here's what the price is going to be, here's what the price we're going to pay is, and here's where it will be allowed to be sold and how it will be marketed. So you really have a strong government role then in doing that. Obstacles could be international trade agreements. In an era when we're all talking deregulation of everything, it's somewhat politically infeasible. And again, it requires an apparatus for ongoing market monitoring and adjustment. But it does have some advantages. There's the model of state-run liquor stores could be used here, which some states now already have, where liquor can only be purchased in state-run stores, reducing the number of outlets and potentially reducing the number of retailer allies that the tobacco industry can mobilize. And it avoids the prohibition charge. But the industry still remains. It's more constrained now, and the government has exerted much stronger control on these products. Finally, regulating the retail sector or the sales of cigarettes themselves, which could involve permitting sales of combustible tobacco products only in restricted outlets, either the state model or some other model, restricting sales to those born before a certain year, as in the tobacco-free generation proposal, which Dick is going to be talking a little more about, so I'm not going to speak about that, or abolishing sales of cigarettes altogether, or phasing them out, which has been proposed by Robert Proctor and others. Obviously, retailers would oppose such a thing. There could be unanticipated uptake of other tobacco products and effects thereof, and the industry would argue that it was a legal product, and what were you doing making it illegal, but that would be somewhat tautological. The potential advantages here is, I think the biggest one, is that it would be more consistent with our regulatory policy on other far less deadly products, doesn't require new infrastructure, frames the problem as what it fundamentally is, which is a consumer protection issue. And it really gets at the big question that we always face in tobacco control, which is, if it's that bad, they wouldn't let you sell it on every street corner, would they? So it reconciles this conflict that we always face, misunderstandings that we always face about this. Not clear how the industry would fare, depending on what else is going on. So I have I'm just going to give a very brief synopsis of some of my own ideas about a possible endgame for the U.S. And I think the important thing is to realize that it doesn't just happen in one place. We can't just be looking to the FDA to fix this for us. We all have to be working on this at multiple levels. And I think there are things that at multiple levels we can be doing. At the local level, outlet restrictions. San Francisco has already done the heavy lifting to get cigarettes out of pharmacies and survived a legal challenge. That means that you have a precedent. So any community can and should ban cigarette sales in pharmacies, and right there you reduce the number of outlets by a lot. You can talk about a plan to eventually phase out sales of combustible cigarettes, even at the local level. Cities can ban a product from being sold in their borders. Are they likely to do that? Will they have a legal challenge? You know, obviously, there will be problems with that. But if you start having that conversation, it starts laying the groundwork. And even media coverage of a failed effort to do that will highlight some of the issues that you want to get attention drawn to. You could offer incentives for retailers to stop selling. We're all already finding in California that some retailers have voluntarily given up selling tobacco because they don't make as much of a profit. It doesn't fit with their image anymore. They don't really feel good about doing it now that smoking is so denormalized in California. So are there ways we could encourage that? At the state level, you could reduce the number and the outlet density. You could increase the cost of licensing if you have tobacco retail licensing. Incentives to stop selling, moving towards sales only in state outlets, or raising the age of purchase yearly. New York just raised the age to 21. I tweeted Mike Bloomberg that he should have made it 65, but he didn't respond. You could eliminate point-of-sale marketing for both cigarettes and e-cigarettes, particularly in areas close to schools. And smoke-free laws, in my opinion, should include e-cigarettes. But, and this may be heretical, I think e-cigarettes should be more available than conventional cigarettes. I think we should make some distinction between these products, because there are distinctions between these products, and this could be a potential game-changing opportunity for tobacco control to say, okay, you want to talk harm reduction? Let's talk about phasing out the combustibles. We have to start having that conversation. At the federal level, I think FDA clearly could reduce the nicotine and get rid of menthol. At all levels, we need to be doing ongoing counter-marketing, including tobacco industry denormalization, because the fundamental point is, if we really are to get to an end game, we will not have the same tobacco industry doing the same things it's doing now. Those two don't compute. So we have to help the public understand the role of the industry in creating this industrially produced epidemic. And that's something that many places people still do not fully understand. They do in California, which is why we have very good support for and more aggressive local measures for tobacco control. And e-cigarettes and NRT should still be available for those who can't or won't quit, as we've discussed. Now, everybody will say this will fail catastrophically. Oh, my God. There will be crime rings bringing in cigarettes from offshore. The public will riot. They'll never stand for this. Well, every single thing we have ever tried to do in tobacco control began with people saying this. They all said we could never have non-smoking sections in restaurants. Oh, the public would never stand for it. The planes would crash if we tried to ban smoking on planes because the smokers would riot. It was all going to be just horrendous. We could never do these things. And yet we did all of these things, and the sky did not fall. And we have dropped smoking rates. So I think this is a conversation we've really got to start having. And the public is ready for it. In 2004, Philip Morris's own polling showed that 68% of the public said they wished there was a way to eliminate cigarettes. And 59% said the right and responsible thing for a tobacco company to do would be to go out of business. More recently, from Australia, they did a study of adults in Victoria. And 71% of the adults said it would be a good thing if there came a day when cigarettes were no longer for sale, including 57% of current smokers. Even the smokers think this is a good idea. And more than half of all adults said it should happen within 10 years, including 40% of smokers. We've had other studies that we review in a report that we've just done that show that this is all over the world. There have been studies of this, and it's fairly consistent. The public is ready for this to happen. It's our will and the political will that have to be mobilized, and we have not wanted to have this conversation. It's been like the third rail. I'm saying it's time to have this conversation. So the question really is no longer whether we're going to have an end game and really bring this epidemic to an end, but when and in what sequence. And I don't think it's going to be one way for everybody. We need to try out different things. Even if they don't work, we will have learned something. We need to obviously keep doing all the things we're doing, trying to get more smoke-free places, working on better cessation, etc. Tobacco industry denormalization, very essential. All the things that we are already doing, we need to do. But we also need to be advancing the conversation and helping lay the groundwork for people to be ready for a time when the epidemic comes to an end. So we need, particularly, I think, to craft a new narrative that makes an end game for tobacco the only possibility, that makes it an inevitable thing, that we will wipe it out like smallpox. And I think the elements of that are an industrially produced epidemic of disease that is due to a fundamentally defective product that, as Robert Proctor has pointed out, is more defective than it needs to be. The industry is not like other businesses that if their products kill people, they pull them off the market. Alternatives exist that are less deadly. Existing measures, even if wildly successful, won't do the job. The public is supportive, including smokers, and we need to compare it with other dangerous products that have been phased out or very strictly regulated. I think we can do this. I think we need more research on it. I'm running out of time, so I'm not going to go into that a great deal. But I think basically what we're faced with is a question of imagining things otherwise, and we need to help one another do that. And I think it's possible that we can end this epidemic all over the world if we work now on laying the groundwork for the end game. Thank you.